E.I. Whiting few things escaped his attention by his son-in-law, Wilford J. Shumway. Two men, so the story goes, were sunning themselves on the south side of the Whiting sawmill at Eager. Presently Mr. Whiting passed by. As usual, he was on a half run. The first man said, "Look at that fellow. What makes him go? He's got more than enough money to last him a lifetime, and he can't take it with him." The second man said, "Oh, I don't know, maybe he can. He's done some mighty strange things. Few people ever acquire the wide and varied interests that he enjoyed. In the business world about him, few things escaped his attention: sawmills, farming, cattle raising, homesteading, the mercantile business, and a keeper of bees. Road building, turkey raising, service stations, and freight lines. Rental buildings, theaters, garages, and automobile dealerships. Have I missed anything? Probably. Be it further noted that whatever he did it with a little more success than the next fellow. When I was courting his daughter, Mabel, one of my uncles inquired as to who my girlfriend was. I momentarily ducked the question, so he asked, 'What does her dad do?' I said, 'Oh, a little bit of everything.' 'HMM,' he said, 'must be a Whiting.' Whether it was football, or the contests of field and track, he was there supporting the home team with hyped-up enthusiasm. He was awarded a trophy for his ardent support of the high school basketball team. At a football game where the home team was woefully behind, the announcer was heard to say, 'St. John's couldn't win now, even if E.I. Whiting was playing quarterback.' Eddie's skill at the bargaining table and his ability to negotiate were legendary. As an all-around horse trader, he had few equals. Seldom was he outmaneuvered. Jay Patterson tells of the time his father sent him across the street to settle some differences that had developed with Mr. Whiting in the matter of a land exchange. Upon his return, Jay says his father leaned forward in his chair, rested his hands on his cane, and said, 'Tell me, son, what did he do to you?' 'He had an extraordinary aptness in returning a verbal thrust. His repartee was quick and decisive. When his wife accused him of hitting a post, as he parked a car, he said, "Well, Ethel, maybe I wanted to hit the post." Legend has it that Ernest, Ralph, and Arthur were riding in a car with E.I. as chauffeur. First he hit a cow, then he narrowly missed a telephone pole, and finally the vehicle all but capsized, as he ran it astraddle of a window of oil cake. Ralph was visibly shaken. He said, "For gosh sake, Eddie, you're going to kill us." E.I.'s reply was almost gentle. "Why, Ralph, I have saved your life three times." It is evident that many of the stories told on the old gentleman didn't really happen. It is true that he took his young son Merwin to Holbrook and absent-mindedly returned without him. But Arthur denies that he left him standing at the gate. It is true that when a truck driver complained that he didn't have a heater in his truck, E.I. instructed him to get a hot rack. But it is not true that when the birth of their daughter Mabel became imminent at 3 a.m., and Ethel shook her husband and informed him of the emergency, that he said, "Couldn't you wait until morning?" And yes, he did appear at the local barber shop wearing two ties. He was frugal and thrifty, to be sure, but generous. Few knew of his assistance and liberal contributions to individuals and the community, to say nothing of his donations to church building funds and welfare projects. During the construction of the Snowflake Meeting House, the superintendent, a man sent out from Salt Lake, refused to pay a bill for lumber, which Mr. Whiting had delivered. Mr. Whiting spent considerable time and effort and finally collected the account. Later, the Snowflake Bishop told me that Mr. Whiting then made a contribution to their building fund for twice the amount he had collected. There was no question but he was the largest contributor to the building of the Eager Ward Meeting House. He had an innate inability to control his emotions when he stood at the pulpit. He said of himself, "I cry when I don't need to." His daughter, Melba, chided him for crying when he spoke in state conference. His reply, "Why, that's part of my audience appeal." Sad to say, he transmitted this malady into the second and third generations. My father-in-law was indeed a marksman extraordinary. I have driven a car at speeds upwards of 40 miles an hour over the roughest of terrain. As the automobile pitched and rolled, and I did my utmost to avoid the hazards of rocks, arroyos, and scrub cedar, he would poke his rifle out the window and knock over an antelope, a coyote, or whatever animal we were pursuing. I never saw him miss.